Good afternoon. I'm David Chappell. Welcome to this talk on the big picture of machine learning. I have to say, I'm so happy to be here in Amsterdam. It's great to be at this event. Really pleased to be here. I'm also happy to say that machine learning, as I'm sure you all know, is a really important topic, but it's also surprisingly simple. I mean, there are aspects of machine learning that are truly specialized, deeply complicated, very mathematical, but I'm not going to talk about those aspects. I'm going to talk about simple stuff, the big picture, the concepts, and I suspect that when I'm done, rather, I hope that when I'm done, you all walk out of here saying, oh, that was pretty simple. That wasn't bad. Because we all have to know, I think, at least the fundamentals, the big picture, of machine learning. So, I'm going to talk about this. I'm going to start with what is machine learning, answer the question. I'll then talk about the machine learning process for a little while, and then the last part of the talk, I will look in a bit more detail at the terminology, some of the concepts of machine learning. Okay? So, let's go. What is machine learning? Well, here's the idea. Machine learning does something that is actually pretty darn simple, conceptually. What it does is this. It finds patterns in data. It finds patterns in data. It then uses those patterns to attempt to predict the future. Okay? So, examples. Think about credit card fraud. Suppose I've got a bunch of data about previous credit card transactions. I know things like the age of the credit card user, the amount of the transaction, whether it's fraudulent, I've got all this data. Could I possibly find a pattern in previous credit card transaction data that would let me predict when I get a new credit card transaction whether or not this is likely to be fraudulent? Can I do that? The answer is yes, you totally can. Or how about this? Suppose I am somebody in a call center run by a mobile phone company. I take phone calls. And I would like to know, for each phone call, whether that customer is someone who's a good, loyal customer of this phone company, or if they're likely to switch. I'd like to know that. Because if they're likely to switch, I might give them special offers. I'd like to know, can I figure that out? Can someone figure that out through machine learning from a bunch of data about customers? The answer is yes, potentially you can. Or how about this? Can you have some kind of scenario where there's lots of robots or other manufacturing devices, and they send me data that lets me decide when to do preventive maintenance? Can I find patterns there? The answer again is yes. These are all scenarios where machine learning can find patterns in existing data and use those patterns to predict what is likely to happen in the future. In fact, you might know this. Sometimes machine learning is considered part of the category called predictive analytics. That word is used sometimes too, that phrase. So, here's a simple example. Suppose I have these four records about people who have submitted credit card transactions. What's the pattern? Can I find in these a pattern for fraudulent transactions? Well, if you look, it's obvious, isn't it? It's obvious. If your name starts with P, you're a criminal, right? It's apparent. Well, not so much, because the issue here is, if I only have four records with a couple columns of data, I can find patterns, but they're probably wrong, right? They're stupid. It's not predictive. It's not predictive. I can't use this to predict the future. Okay, what if I had more data? Now I have 10 records, and I have more information. I have the name, the amount, where the card was issued, where it was used, the age of the issuer. Now what's the pattern? Well, it turns out there actually is a pattern in there. You could find it if you looked hard enough. There is a pattern. But even this isn't enough data, probably, to be truly predictive, to do a good job of judging whether or not a new credit card transaction is going to be fraudulent. Suppose I have not 10 records, but 10 million records. Ah, now I could probably find some patterns that will really help me judge whether a new transaction is fraudulent or not. Except with 10 million records, I can't find the patterns. I can't search through 10 million records myself, neither can you. But software can. Software can certainly search through 10 million records. And so, in a nutshell, here is machine learning. You start with data, and that data contains patterns. At least you hope it contains patterns. You then analyze that data with one or more machine learning algorithms. This is just software that looks for patterns in the data. The output of that is something called a model. And this is the first example of a thing we're going to see over and over, which is, in my opinion, very confusing terminology. In some ways, the hardest thing in machine learning is the terminology. So a model sounds like some data abstraction, right? No. A model's code. A model's code, typically. Because the model is able to recognize patterns. The machine learning algorithm finds patterns in data and then spits out some code called a model that can find those patterns again. And so now an application comes along, and the application can then provide data to the model and say, hey, model, does this data match the patterns you can recognize? So for example, if the machine learning algorithm has processed a bunch of credit card transaction data and produced a model that it believes will predict whether a transaction is going to be fraudulent or not, an app can come along, be given a new transaction, and supply that data to the model and say, model, look at this data. Does this fit your pattern for likely fraudulent transactions? Model will come back and say, typically not yes or no. It'll say, this transaction is 90% likely to be fraudulent, or 5%, or something like that. Machine learning. Simple, right? That's the core idea. That's the core idea of machine learning. So why is it so hot right now? How come it's gotten to be such a big deal? Why are you all here? Here's why. It's because to do this well, you got to have lots of data. Now, doesn't necessarily mean petabytes of data, but excuse me, having data is good. You also need to have compute power. As you saw in the keynote this morning, Corey mentioned a bit about Azure having special things in it that are used extensively for machine learning. Excuse me. Sorry. And you also need effective machine learning algorithms, effective ways to find patterns in data. Well, it turns out that all three of these things are now more available than ever. This is hardly a brand new technology. It's not. But, sorry, the things that make it more effective have become more available than ever. And maybe some of you are saying, well, wait a minute, David, there's this thing called data mining, which does very similar things, right? So is this the same thing as data mining? And the answer, near as I can tell, is that people don't agree about this. It certainly has similarities, and I know some people who are really strong in this space who will say it's the same thing as data mining. Others will say, no, they're totally different. But there's clearly a bunch of overlap between what we now call machine learning and what has been called data mining for quite a while. There's clearly overlap there. All right. So who cares about this? What kind of people are interested in machine learning? Business leaders. People who run businesses. They want solutions to their problems. For example, if you run a credit card processing company, being able to predict whether or not transactions are fraudulent is worth a great deal of money to you. There's real value here in doing this well. And that's good, because that means they will pay to create models. Business leaders own the money, typically. And so having them interested is critically important. Who else cares about this? Answer, developers, you. Why? Because machine learning can help you build better applications. Bear with me here. I'm going to use the same example, just for simplicity, over and over and over in this talk, of credit card fraud detection. Suppose you are assigned the problem of building an app that detects credit card fraud. And suppose further, you've got no access to machine learning, or no data, or whatever. What would you do? What would you do? Well, you might go find people who are experts in this problem. Go talk to them. Say, so, how do I do this? What should I look for? They could help you. They could tell you, well, you know, we see credit card fraud a lot in men who are in their 20s, who are using a card they got in the Netherlands, but they're using it in Russia. They might know some of these patterns. You could write code that implements those patterns. So without machine learning, you have to talk to people, do your best to figure out the right algorithm, the right solution for detecting the pattern. With machine learning, though, you could outsource that problem to the model that's produced by the machine learning technology. So the real point of machine learning here is to help you build better apps by learning from the data. There's a third group here that's interested, and they're called data scientists. You hear this phrase all the time these days. So what the heck is a data scientist? People don't always agree on this, but basically, a data scientist is this. It's somebody who knows about statistics, because by no means all, but a lot of the machine learning algorithms are about statistics, looking for patterns in data. They also know about software, machine learning software, technology, and so on. Now, right away, that's a rare combination, people who are strong in both those things. But a really killer data scientist is also really strong in some vertical area. Maybe, for example, they know all there is to know about credit card fraud, or movie recommendations, or predictive maintenance in factory scenarios, or something else. So ideally, a data scientist would have all those attributes. Pretty rare. In fact, the things to know about data scientists are these. Number one, they're scarce. Number two, they're expensive. No surprise, right? When people are scarce and can bring real value, they tend to cost a lot of money. You might have seen also that there's this tremendous amount of courses and other information there about how to become a data scientist. It's a very hot profession, and this is why. Because they can bring real value, it's not easy to do across specialized skills, and there are too few of them today. There are in the world lots of machine learning technologies. Here are some examples. The classic analytics vendors like SAS have products in this space. The people that Gartner calls mega vendors are in this space as well, IBM, SAP, Oracle, Microsoft. And the cloud vendors are also in this space, Microsoft, Amazon, Google. There are lots more. But those are some of the major machine learning products out there today. This talk is not really about those products, although I'll discuss Azure ML a little bit in a little while. The point here of this slide is to illustrate that you've got these big vendors out there pushing machine learning in a big way. What does that mean? What it means is that they think this is a high growth market. Big vendors tend to enter markets they view as high growth. So they think there's lots of money in this market. All right. So far, what have I said? Machine learning lets us find patterns in data, and then recognize those patterns when they show up again in new data. It's totally gone mainstream. The big vendors think there's big money here, and they're right. They're almost certainly right. And very possibly, machine learning can help your organization. Because if you have data, and you probably do, historical data, about something you're doing, that data probably has patterns. If you can find them, you can use them to potentially build better applications. So how do you do that? Well, you have to apply the machine learning process. So let's talk for a while about the machine learning process. All right. The process is iterative. You repeat things over and over. And it's iterative at both the highest level and at smaller levels inside the process. So there are various levels of iteration, as I will show you in just a few minutes. The process can be challenging. It's conceptually simple, as I'll show you. But to actually do it requires accomplishing a number of fairly complex things in some cases. Not always, but in some cases. So it can be challenging. But it's often rewarding. There's real value here. But look at that last point. Not always. This is really important. If you sit down to write some software, you usually succeed, don't you? You're going to write a device driver, let's say. At some point, you'll deploy, you'll have some bugs, you'll fix the bugs, it's going to work. When you write code, it works eventually, right? Data mining, I'm sorry, same thing here, with machine learning, it's not like that necessarily, because failure very much is an option. It may be the case that you start this process and you have that data to work from, and at the end, you've accomplished nothing. You have found no patterns in your data that are truly predictive of what you're trying to predict. So be aware here that failure is an option. You're not guaranteed to succeed. The thing you want to learn about just might not be learnable from the data that you have. And so, the first problem, the most important part of a machine learning project is this. It is asking the right question. So for instance, to use my same example, the question I want to ask might well be, how can I predict whether a new credit card transaction I receive is likely to be fraudulent? Because if it is, I want to reject it and not lose the money. Okay, important question, real value, but ask yourself this. Given the data I have to work with, the data I have available to me to search for patterns, is it the case that I have the right data to answer that question? For example, I showed you earlier 10 records of this kind of data. I had the person's age, the amount of the transaction, where the card was issued, where it was used. Okay, is the data that I have available, those rows and columns, is that data actually predictive of what I'm trying to do? Or maybe it's the case that the thing that's really predictive of fraud is whether somebody owns their own home. Maybe if they're renters, the chances of their being fraudulent go way up. But homeowners are more trustworthy. Maybe that's the case. And maybe I don't have that data. Well, if that's the case, I'm stuck, right? It's always possible that the data you have, however voluminous, doesn't contain the right stuff to be predictive. So be aware that you're not guaranteed to succeed. You're just not. Also, when you start, you should ask yourself, how will I know when I'm done? What does success look like? Am I trying to, for example, save a certain percentage of euros every month in fraudulent transactions? Am I trying to hit a certain fixed amount of euro savings? Am I trying to increase customers by this percent? What am I trying to do here? Defining what success looks like is important here, because this is not a binary situation where you're starting from here and going to there. There's more ambiguity than that. Asking the right question, having the right data, knowing what success looks like up front, all important aspects of being successful with machine learning. The process, at a high level, looks like this. You start with some data, some raw data. Raw data is always messy, isn't it? It has duplicates, it has missing values, It's just messy in all sorts of ways. And so the process commonly starts with time spent pre-processing that data to create what's often called prepared data. Now, it turns out that you do that using typically some data pre-processing software, some modules, and you do that iteratively. You do that over and over, applying various kinds of pre-processing until you're happy with the prepared data. Turns out that in lots and lots of machine learning projects, that part of the process eats up around two-thirds of the time. It winds up being a big deal, a big part of the machine learning process, because getting the data right is so important. But now, once I have my prepared data, I can start looking for patterns. I can apply machine learning algorithms to that data. And I can spit out candidate models. Remember what the model is software, typically, that lets me recognize patterns. So I will produce a model from each time, potentially, I run the algorithm. They're all candidates. Is this good enough? Is this good enough? Does it predict effectively? You do that using, typically, some supplied machine learning algorithms, and that, again, is iterative. You do that until you find a model you like. How do you know? I'll come back to that later on. Once you've got a model that you like, you can deploy it, and that's really important. It's really important because lots of earlier machine learning technologies provided no effective way to deploy. They were science projects. You've got to make it available because then applications can use it. And that's the whole point, remember? The whole point is better, smarter applications. So, there's the process. I haven't talked at all yet about any products. Let me just show you how Azure Machine Learning fits against this process. Azure Machine Learning provides a bunch of data pre-processing modules. It provides a bunch of machine learning algorithms. It provides an API and a way to deploy, and it provides this interesting tool called ML Studio, Machine Learning Studio. ML Studio provides a way to do all this stuff, do pre-processing, apply algorithms, deploy, and it gives you a graphical surface to work with. Now, it's interesting. Azure Machine Learning is designed, to some extent, for data scientists. It kind of assumes that you know a good bit about data science. The average developer who looked at it the first time might say, oh, well, that's kind of complicated. At the same time, I know plenty of developers who say, no, that's not true. I can use this just fine. I won't get all the power out of it that a trained data scientist would, but I can still use this just fine. So, you might think about that. If you try it the first time and think, oh, this is complicated, don't be too put off. All right. I told you earlier that the machine learning process is iterative, both at small and big scales. Well, you've seen already iteration at small scales. You iterate to cleanse the data. You iterate to generate models. But you also, when you have that process, you also commonly iterate by running the whole thing over periodically. You recreate your model periodically. Why is that? It's because the world changes. So if I'm using this to predict credit card fraud, to recommend movies, to do preventive maintenance, things change. Data changes. And so you need to periodically run the whole process, maybe once a year, once every 6 months, once a month, depends on your data. You must do this whole thing over again to get a new model periodically, or you will slip out of alignment with reality. With me so far? This is not so complex, is it? It's not. It's not. The concepts are pretty straightforward. For our last 20 minutes, I'm going to get marginally more complex, but we're not quite there yet. Some quick examples, using again the Azure world to be concrete. Excuse me. Suppose I've got credit card customers, and they're using some kind of payment app. That payment app might want to refer to a machine learning model to determine whether a transaction is fraudulent. Well, you might have done that by having data in Azure Blobs that Azure ML can then process to generate the model that the application uses. Great. An illustration of the scenario done in an Azure context I've been talking about throughout this session this afternoon. Here's another picture. You might have this. You might have the thing I mentioned earlier. Call center people using a call center app running on Azure. Those guys might be working for a mobile phone company, let's say, and they want to know, for each call, how likely is this customer to leave us for a competitor? In the jargon of this world, you'd say, how likely is this customer to churn, to dump me? And you do that because, again, you'll give them different offers. You'll be nicer to customers that are likely to leave you, offer them discounts. How could you do that? Well, if you're a mobile phone company, you've got all this data. Let's imagine that Azure Blobs, you've stored detailed call data. Every call, every customer, every time. Well, great. That's probably actually too much for machine learning. It's a useful basis, but it's just too much. So you might do this. You might build an app on Azure HD Insight, Hadoop, Spark, big data processing, that aggregates that call data into some more compressed stuff. You might then run another app on HD Insight that combines that aggregated data with CRM data about the customer to create this more unified data set, which then is fed into Azure ML to create the model you want. The point here is that you don't always just take raw data. You might combine various sources. You might process it in various ways, e.g., using Hadoop or Spark, HD Insight on Azure. Okay, common thing to do. Or how about this? Suppose I have a classic IoT scenario, a bunch of robots, a bunch of refrigerators in an industrial setting, whatever. Those guys spit out all kinds of streaming data about their status. Let's imagine it's all being processed by Azure IoT Hub, and then looked at using some streaming technology. Azure has several of them. Stream Analytics, it supports Storm, it supports Spark Streaming, any of those, right? Then maybe the streaming technology is looking for trends. Maybe they're refrigerators, and that technology, that software, can figure out when the average temp goes above 31 degrees in the refrigerators, or 40 degrees, whatever it might be. It could then inform, via some notification application, the maintenance staff who will go fix the problem before anything goes wrong. Okay, great, classic IoT scenario, but here's the question. How does the streaming technology in the middle figure out what those trends look like and when things are problematic? Well, the answer might well be it relies on an Azure ML model produced earlier by somebody doing machine learning on that data. Always in which you might use machine learning, always in which you can see how Azure ML can fit effectively with other parts of the Azure platform. These things don't live in isolation. All right, so main points here. In the process, you want to ask the right question, for sure. You want to choose the right data, get it into good shape. You want to iterate until you have a model that works, makes good predictions. You then have to deploy the model, and periodically, you've got to rebuild it. All right. Let's talk about terminology. Because here's the thing. My opinion, machine learning concepts are not hard. Machine learning terminology is, frankly, irritating. It's irritating because it's almost misleading in some ways. So let's discuss terminology. First of all, Training data. All right. I've talked about prepared data, the stuff you get by processing raw data that is then input to the machine learning algorithm. Well, turns out, in the jargon of machine learning, you call that training data. And the process of running algorithms across that data to produce candidate models is called training the model. You don't create a model, you train a model. Sounds much better, doesn't it? You train the model. Fine, okay. You train your model using training data. Super. Then, when you're doing this, when you are creating your models, training your models, there are two big styles you might be using. The first, and the most common, is called supervised learning. In supervised learning, the value you're trying to predict is actually present in the training data. So, for example, in my earlier illustration of all those records about credit card fraud, do you recall that the last field on the right was actually whether or not this was a fraudulent transaction, yes or no? That was data I could use for supervised learning because the thing I wanted to find was actually in the data. Each record indicated whether it was fraudulent or not. Great. People would say that's labeled data. It's labeled because it contains the value I'm trying to predict. Doing that is known as supervised learning. The alternative, unsurprisingly, is called unsupervised learning. It's where the value I want to predict is not present in the training data. The data is therefore unlabeled. If you're thinking, how in the world could I ever do that? Well, you got good instincts because it's hard. It's substantially harder, generally, than doing supervised learning. But fortunately, a majority of machine learning projects today rely on supervised learning. But all that means is the data you're trying to predict is present. The value you want to predict is present in the data you're working with, your training data. All right, so in supervised learning, I might start with some data, some relational data, some NoSQL data, some blob data, whatever. I'm going to process that through my data preprocessing modules to create some training data. Okay? I called that prepared data earlier, but again, these guys would call it training data. Now, training data is just a table. It's a table with rows and columns. And since my example shows supervised learning, that data contains what I'm looking for. What you and I might call columns in a table, machine learning people call features. Okay, features. I've always wondered, is this because this came out of an academic world where they were trying to get grant money to work on things? And nobody would give you grants for prepared data with columns, but for trained data with features, you got more money. I don't know. The terminology is just so puzzling, it seems to me. Anyway, training data has features, which are in fact just columns in the table. And with supervised learning, our example here, one of those features, one of those columns, contains the thing you're looking for called the target value. Again, to be concrete, in my earlier set of data I showed you, on the far right of those records was whether or not it was a fraudulent transaction, yes or no. That's the target value. If that's present in the data, you can do supervised learning. Okay? All right. Now, you apply to that a machine learning algorithm. And which algorithm you pick depends on a bunch of things, one of which is what kind of problem you think this is. Now, there are lots of options here, but there are three categories of machine learning problems that appear a lot. The first is regression. If I've got a bunch of data and I'm trying to find some pattern in that data, it might be the case that this is just a regression problem. So, regression is commonly used, supervised learning, and an example question would be something like this. Maybe my question is, how many units of a product am I going to sell next month? I can predict that from past sales just by regression, a basic statistical technique. Super. A second big category is called classification. where I have all this data and I want to classify it into two, sometimes more than two, categories. This is also commonly used in supervised learning. And an example question here is this transaction fraudulent? The example I've been using over and over is in fact an example of classification. Why? Because for each transaction, I'm trying to say, is this fraudulent or not? Which category is it in, this one or that one? It's classification. That's a big category for machine learning problems. A third big category is clustering. Here, I'm looking at data, and I'm trying to find clusters, things that are related to each other in some way. This approach is more commonly used with unsupervised learning, where I just don't know what I'm looking for necessarily. And an example question might be something like this. What are our customer segments? I've got customer data. I want to segment them. But I don't know what they are until I look around a little bit. There's no label that it says customer segment 1, 2, 3. This is an example of unsupervised learning, where I'm kind of exploring the data, trying to figure out how to organize it, how it structures naturally together. This can be hard, and also can be very subjective. People make big decisions here. As I mentioned earlier, there are lots and lots of different machine learning algorithms, tons of them. There are a few styles that appear pretty often. There are, for example, regression algorithms that are used for regression problems, no big surprise. There are decision trees people use. People use neural networks. In his keynote this morning, Corey mentioned deep learning. Deep learning uses neural networks with machine learning to do certain things. It's a hot topic these days. There's the Bayesian approach, using Bayes theory about probabilities. There's k-means. K-means is used for clustering problems. Now, this is where life gets really complicated. If you want to be a specialist, you could spend years of your life learning and understanding all of these diverse algorithms. This gets really complicated. But products like Azure ML just give you this. It's built in. There's still knowledge you have to use them effectively. You don't have to build them. They're in the product. So, you now have your training data, remember, you produced earlier. You can now apply machine learning algorithms to that. The training data, remember, has the target value you're trying to predict, such as whether or not this transaction is fraudulent. You then look at the training data and you decide which features you think are most likely to be predictive of the target value. How do you decide? It's up to you. Maybe trial and error. Maybe you just know the space pretty well. You know what's likely to be predictive? You choose which features, which columns, are most likely to predict what you're looking for, such as fraudulent transactions. Then, you input that training data to your chosen algorithm. But in supervised learning, you don't input all of it. You input, say, 75% of all data for features 1, 3, and 6. Why only that percentage? I'll tell you later. Bear with me for now, okay? That much data gets sent to your learning algorithm. Out comes a candidate model. Great. Super. Now you want to know, is that model any good? Is it predictive? When I give it new data, and it predicts fraudulent or not, is it likely to be right? How can I know? Well, the answer, I got to test it. Well, how can I test it? Well, here's how you test the model in supervised learning. Do you remember I had you hold back a quarter of the data when you built the model? That was so you can use the remaining quarter to test the candidate model. Because if I give the model that held back data from the training data, the model will then make predictions. It'll generate target values. Well, I have the target values it should produce, right? For the training data, I know what the targets should be. They're right there in the training data. I compare them. That's how I can figure out whether or not my candidate model is predictive. Okay, this is supervised learning. With unsupervised, I don't have any of that target value data. How do I know if it's any good or not? The answer is, it's hard. That's part of why it's so hard, right, to do unsupervised learning. Now, what if what happens here is I've gotten that data come out and my model's no good? How do I improve my model? Well, maybe I choose new features. Maybe the ones I chose weren't the best ones to be predictive. Or maybe I need more data. Maybe I need newer data. Maybe I need more features to choose from, or just more records. Or maybe I can take my algorithm and change a parameter, or try another algorithm. There are lots and lots of choices. These are all ways I might improve my model. And if you're thinking this, I'm with you. If you're thinking, well, wait a minute, this is called machine learning, but aren't people doing an awful lot of stuff here? Aren't people making all these judgments? What features to use? What algorithm? When you're done? Yes, it's a very human process. It can be non-trivial to do this stuff correctly, which is why data scientists make so much money, because this can be hard to do and require deep knowledge. Not always, but it can be. And then finally, again, unless you deploy your model and it gets used by applications, you're probably just doing a science project. So in Azure ML, that's a really important part of the story. ML Studio has built-in support to let you deploy your model into Azure. Azure can then scale the model as well. It also has an API it exposes, so applications can call into the model. An application, when it calls into the model, must supply the right data for the model to make a prediction. It must supply the features that the model needs to compare the new data to the pattern it found. The model then returns an indication of whether or not, say, this transaction is fraudulent. It returns an indication of how well it matches the pattern. And once again, models like this are unlikely to say fraudulent or not fraudulent. More likely, it says the odds of this guy being fraudulent are 90% or 5%, or it might say 50%, in which case it's up to the app to decide what to do. Those are business choices. Those are not machine learning choices. Machine learning helps you decide whether it's fraudulent, for example. What to do in that case is a business issue, not a machine learning issue. All right. Machine learning has really come of age. It's a hot topic right now for some very good reasons. It's not so hard to understand, is it? Was this so hard? Was this so hard? Please say no. It wasn't so hard, but it can be very hard to do well, potentially. And my last point here, to repeat this, machine learning, not certainly, but probably, can help your organization in some way. I encourage you to take a look at what it might do for you. Thank you.